Bears Robert Crane, a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure technical specialist, PowerShell extraordinaire, and IT consultant, helping people move to the Microsoft cloud and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane. It's all about the Microsoft cloud.
Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Keane. Mark, how's it going?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad. So what's been happening out there for you since you've last spoken?
Not too busy, but basically just the same sort of thing about the whole Azure consumption. So moving, trying to get people to understand the IaaS version 2, or the Azure Resource Manager, which is quite a lot of moving parts to it.
Yeah, so I did a blog post which we'll put up in the show notes that takes people through the basics of using Resource Manager to set up a virtual machine. It's a bit of a challenge, a bit of a change, but I certainly can see the benefits of it and see why Microsoft's moving that way. So, again, we encourage people to have a look at that. One of the things I just discovered, I suppose, last night, there is a very, very interesting presentation. Microsoft gave a keynote presentation at a Connect conference in the US around Skype for Business. So, again, we'll put the link in the show notes, but it had some absolutely mind-blowing stuff in there. You know, something called Project Rigel, and the way that they're rolling out the Cloud PBX and the PSTN stuff and their ability to aggregate the information into the Office 365 Cloud is truly impressive. And again, it shows you the benefit of a cloud-based system and also where Microsoft's going with this. So certainly encourage everybody to have a look at that. It's about a 40-minute presentation, but I can guarantee you it's really worth your while. And did some Skype training this week with Microsoft, and there was some partners there like Logitech. And Logitech, again, have got this fantastic little device with a little tube, basically, and you stick it in a room. It's got microphones, a camera, and you connect it up to a PC, and it'll do your conferencing for you.
Sorry, what was that, a tube?
Yeah, it's basically a little, I think they call it the Logitech Connect. I'd have to look it up. But basically, imagine it like a very small tube of about, you know, half a meter or so in size. Mm-hmm. And it's got microphones around the bottom, and in the top part, it's got a video camera. So basically, you put the little tube, like a little roll, in the middle of your office. Yep. Connected up to a PC and run Skype for Business, and it's your full conferencing.
Like a meeting room, for example.
Correct. Exactly right. That's exactly what it's designed for. Now, what Project Rigel is all about is that device will be certified, so it'll be able to connect to just a dock. So Logitech are going to come out with a dock, which is basically just a small little tablet-style screen so that you can walk into the office, basically push one button on the screen, and you can either start a meeting or connect to a meeting without having to do anything else, just using this device. And this device is like $600 or something. It's absolutely brilliant.
If they can get people connecting to a meeting less than 5 minutes, every meeting I've been to, it never starts on time. It's always 7 minutes behind.
Well, and again, that's why that's why this presentation is so worthwhile, because Microsoft, acknowledges that fact that most meetings, you waste so much time, they don't start on time because...
Sorry, Rob, can you hear me?
Can you hear me? I hear you.
I'm kidding. That's exactly what happens in the meeting.
Yeah, exactly. So, but in this case, Microsoft's basically recognized that. So 75% of meeting rooms basically only have a monitor and a phone, or, you know, some sort of conferencing phone in the middle there. And they're basically overcoming those sort of issues we talked about using, coming out with this, Project Rigel, which, again, it's very hard to, if you sit down and watch the video that we'll put in the show notes, it's absolutely amazing. And again, I think it's a really good indication of how Microsoft's on the right track and understanding the user need. And the great thing to see is that partners like Logitech, Polycom, Cisco, those guys are coming out with devices that will hook up to Skype for Business, use all the power that is in the Skype for Business and the cloud back end to make it so simple for users and give even the smallest business this functionality that big businesses have had for a long time.
That's fantastic. I've always wondered, like, when they were going to design a microphone like the human ear, which is susceptible to, like, echoes and stuff, which to this point, it's never really happened, but sounds promising.
Well, yeah, you're the sound guy, I suppose, the producer guy. So, again, I certainly see huge potential in this. I think that, you know, what we see typically with Office 365 is that most people, most customers and also resellers are just implementing and just using just simple dumb email, you know, the simple dumb email that you've always used, and they aren't using a lot of these other features. And obviously part of your role is to increase the consumption of tools like Azure. And again, Skype for Business, I think, is one of those really, really easy to implement options in Office 365 that people just aren't taking up, and they really should, because it provides such improved functionality, such great options, and, you know, allows you to do so much. I use it every day, so I certainly would commend people to get into it and have a look at it.
Yeah, okay, cool.
All right, anything else that you've come across or found interesting?
Yeah, something I saw in the, which probably more relates to you, I think, is the change in the MVP scheme.
I don't think it's going to be a big effect for me because, again, I'm more a technical person in the streams, I suppose, that they're focused on. But they're obviously moving the people who do the consumer Microsoft products, so things like Xbox and Surface and those sort of things, moving them to, I suppose, many people look at it as a downscaling of their their credentials when it comes to being an MVP. So we'll see what happens. But
that's where it started, right, was the consumer part.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure the exact history of it, but basically you've got a group of people who are very, very passionate and very knowledgeable about Microsoft products through the full range. And I think as Microsoft begins to focus more and more on the enterprise, focus more and more on things like Office 365, Azure, SQL, it makes sense to bring those back to its roots there. And I think also too that part of it is that, you know, there are a lot of people out there and you've got to look at it, make sure that they provide value for people. So I think, again, I think making it maybe a little bit more exclusive, changing things around, focusing on the enterprise does make sense. It'll obviously upset a few people who may have, you know, got benefit out of doing it in a consumer role. There'll be a role for them, but it may not just be the same. But things can change. But to me, look, in the long run, I like to see that Microsoft, again, is focusing, is doing less, is really trying to hone down what it does and not try to do everything like it used to previously do and try and be Apple. So to me, it makes a lot of sense.
Just have to make all those staff members who work at the Microsoft store mini MVPs, because essentially that's what they are.
Well, it's getting that way, isn't it? I don't know if you've been to the store. It's a very interesting place, actually, and I think that it'd be a very interesting place to work with so many people coming in with issues and questions and queries and whatnot. But
you have to know heaps.
Well, I think the interesting thing is in the Sydney store, I think they said there are 28 languages spoken between like 17 staff or something.
Really?
So again, it just shows you the commitment that Microsoft's making to make that a good consumer experience, obviously based on the work that people like Apple have done. So I think it gives them a good face. It's a good way to go. But you're right. I mean, I think the secret to it is as you and I would probably agree, is you need to go deep rather than wide, which means you really need to know your product well and then connect with people who know their product well rather than trying to learn it all. It's just not possible in this day and age, I don't think.
No, not really.
So, yeah, what else have I got here? I think that we've got some, I suppose there's been some security announcements that Microsoft's come out with. I'm still over the moon about the SharePoint storage being increased to 1 terabyte. Certainly seeing a lot of people now taking that up and running with that because now they can move their files in there. I think that's been a great step to removing a very common impediment to what we see. The big thing that I'm sweating on now is the cloud PSDN connectivity to come to Australia. So the ability to make a landline call directly from my Skype for Business on my desktop or my phone is something I just can't wait for. So hopefully that won't be far away. The PSTN call, the PSTN conferencing will be coming, I believe, within a month or so, which means that you'll be able to set up a Skype meeting and have people dial in via a common phone line. So that is coming first. But the actual ability for users to go in and have their own phone line and then make landline calls will be phenomenal for all businesses, especially small business. I think it's just going to be such a huge impact. And again, I think a lot of people are underestimating what that is going to mean for the IT landscape.
See, Telstra's going to do it something slightly different. They've always had a plan, because currently at the moment it's CATS, LTE Category 6 is what we've got now. I think the next categories of LTE that are coming out later, they're going to get rid of the whole current calling mechanism over the whichever protocol they use and put it over the internet, so voice over LTE. So they're going to do it slightly differently.
Yeah, but I think what we're seeing is you're going to get some big players. So you've got obviously Google and its Hangouts, and it bought, I can't remember what the product it bought, but it bought RingCentral or somebody, I can't remember what it bought. I can't remember what it bought. But, you know, you're going to have these big telco, these big IT companies, which are now suddenly telcos, and they'll be able to leverage the technology. So what we're seeing is again, we're seeing this digitization, this rolling in of technology, how it's dominating so many fields and changing it all up. And again, you know, I think what I read was that Microsoft is almost now the fifth largest telco in the world, thanks to Skype and Skype for Business. And something like, you know, 25% of all international voice traffic now travels using some form of Skype. So again, you know, Microsoft's telephony business has now suddenly become gigantic.
Actually, just quickly, I just remembered too, you're talking about the storage for OneDrive up to 1 terabyte. I saw the roadmap for the OneDrive for Business new sync client. They're going to go back and support syncing of SharePoint document libraries.
Yeah, I'm still a bit jaded as to whether this, you know, how this will work. And we've had a lot of unfortunate, not so positive history when it comes to OneDrive sync. Unfortunately, consumers basically want to be able to, or businesses want to be able to basically copy their documents up to somewhere in the cloud, then sync everything back down for some illogical, irrational reason, in my opinion. And unfortunately, doing that puts a lot of stress, obviously, on the system and the sync client. And once you get problems, things get out of sync. It's a very difficult technology to actually get working. And unfortunately, I think Microsoft's gone down the road of perhaps over-promising this a little bit, and it really needs to make sure it delivers. So unfortunately, in my opinion, the initial next-gen sync client was better, but it still wasn't good enough. It needs to be good enough for consumer, you know, ordinary average users. The new announcements certainly move it closer towards getting that, but I think I'll reserve judgment to have actually used the product and get it working on machines. So I'm
It's good that they're listening anyway.
Oh, look, they're making progress, and that's great. But the thing is, they have taken a very long time to get such an important critical component out. They really need to put a lot more emphasis, I think, and focus on it. And it's good to see that they are doing it. But again, it's one of those things like, look, you know, I can't wait for it to come, get it here as soon as possible. But I'm a little bit jaded that I'd like to actually see what happens, because they tend to, you know, make an announcement, and then when you actually go and read the fine print, there are some major restrictions, like the current next-gen sync client doesn't do SharePoint document libraries, which is a bit of a pain. So they'll fix that in the next version, but let's hope they really knock out some of those major impediments and get this syncing product to a point where that it's good or better than its competition. That's what really needs to happen, in my opinion.
Okay.
Good. All right. Well, I think that we've covered off a lot of stuff. We'll put the links in the show notes. So check up on those. If you've got any comments, feedback about the show, we got some feedback this week on the audio quality, which Mark has taken care of in some updated issues. So again, the way you can contact me is at Director CIA. What's the best way for them to get on contact with you, Mark?
At Mark Keane. So MARC KEAN. It's a bit of an odd spelling of a name, but
Just make sure that you don't order coffee at the same time. So basically,
we'll have to put that image on the show notes.
That's very interesting. We will put that, like I said, in the show notes. Hit us up on Twitter. We're pretty active on social media, but again, emails. We're very interested to hear what you think of the show, what you want to hear, how we can improve the show. But with that, I think let's dive into our topic. And what we're going to focus on in this episode is the storage options available in Azure. which means it will be leaning on the experience and expertise of our co-host here, Mr. Keen. So why don't you kick us off, Mark, with basically an outline of what options have we got to actually store stuff in Azure?
The most common, you got heaps of options. So I'll start with probably the most common one, which is blob storage. So blob storage, and it's slightly different to AWS, is you pretty much set up a storage account. You get, with that storage account, you get a storage account name and two keys. And the two keys are essentially like passwords, and they're massively long keys. There's a primary and a secondary. They both work. The reason why there's two keys is because, so if you've got one application using one key and you need to change that key, you can configure the application to get it to use the second key while changing the first key at the same time. So it just means that you can, there's less downtime. So with the storage account, you have a whole range of things that you can do with that. So you can do blob storage, you can do table storage, page blobs, you can do queue storage, you can do Azure files. You can pretty much do anything you want with that storage account. Now, that's all well and good, but then the new storage accounts that are out now, and they've been out for a little while, are like a premium-based storage account, which is slightly different. Now, if I go back to the normal storage accounts for a sec, the advantage of those storage accounts, up front, they're completely free. So you set up a storage account, or two or three or four or whatever storage accounts. It doesn't cost you any money until you actually use the data inside of it. Now, whether you're using sort of raw data as stored as, say, blob storage, or whether you're using data stored as, say, VHD disks, VHDs for virtual machines, stored as page blobs, that's when you start to use data inside of the storage account. And when you start to use the data, you only pay for that, and it's based per minute. So if you start deleting stuff, then you obviously you take advantage of that up to the nearest minute. Slightly different to AWS, though. If you attach a 128 gig drive to a VM, you're paying for that up front. Whereas in Microsoft Azure, if you attach a 128 gig drive to a virtual machine, if it's just a data drive and it's got nothing on there, you're not paying for it up front, obviously, because, again, you're just paying for what you use. Now, with premium storage, however, tables are turned a little bit. So if you set up a premium storage account, you have one of the S family machines that support the premium storage accounts. So the DS machines or GS, whichever machine families you sort of provision. Once you set up a premium storage account and attach premium disks to it, then whichever type of premium disk that you choose, whether it's P10, P20 or P30, so one of them is 128, one of them is, I think, 256, I think the other one's 512. Let me just quickly check. I don't have it here in front of me, but there's three different types of premium storage disks you can get. It's similar to the AWS methodology, where you pay for that storage up front. So it's not like pay is what you use. So just be wary of that. If you're going to attach a premium disk to your VM, you're paying for that 128, for example, up front. But the benefit, you get the speed, and you can actually delete that the drive within a couple of minutes. So hang on, here we are now. So we've got P10, which is 128, P20, 512, and P30, which is a terabyte in size. And that obviously goes up to 5,000 IOPS.
Cool. All right. So I suppose, as you say, there's lots and lots of different options. I mean, you know, I think the first thing to qualify, obviously, is that when you create one of the workloads in Azure is virtual machines, so you can spin up basically a Windows server in Azure, and that virtual server needs to have some hard disk space. And it will be configured via the virtual machine. So that hard disk space obviously is a storage component that is associated generally with that machine. You've got the general blob storage. So blob is binary large object, which basically means any sort of random data. And then we've got specialized storage. You've got your premium storage. You've got things like SQL as well. But for the average punter out there, I suppose, the average business that typically sees data as files, so, you know, files, folders, Excel, Word, PowerPoint, PDFs, all that sort of stuff, what's the best option within Azure to basically store that? So the scenario is that I have an old or an aging server that's falling over. I want to migrate all of those files into something like Azure. So obviously we could do it to Office 365 and SharePoint, but just in this case, let's say that we want to focus on getting a number of terabytes, maybe not terabytes, a number of a couple of hundred gigabytes of data into somewhere in Azure. What's the best option there?
Okay, so this is to replace an on-premises file server, right?
Yeah, basically.
Okay, so I'll ask you a question. Requirements, which is basically what I'm asking lots of people. Is it a requirement that you have to have permissions for each of those files?
So I think, again, they're a very interesting question. I think that most people, when you look at it, they currently do have permissions on their file system. But when you actually analyze it and look at it, they don't really make use of those permissions, or they work around it. So I think that I would suggest that let's say it this way. So let's say that 30% of my information, so let's give some numbers here. So let's say I've got, let's say we've got 500 gigabytes of data. Let's say that a third of that, or a fifth of that, so 100 gigabytes of that, basically needs to have permissions, so to individually prevent people from looking at finance or HR or whatever. But the remaining, the 400 gigabytes of information, doesn't necessarily have to have permission. So let's say we've got a smaller component that does need permissions and a larger component that does.
Okay, so there's a couple of ways you can do it. So the first one, it slightly meets that requirement of keeping business departments separate. Excuse me. So for example, you've got finance, you've got marketing, you've got sales and different teams. And I guess currently at the moment, when users log on to their computer, they have a script or a group policy that executes, and it maps a network drive to their share. And so if they're part of the finance team, they'll get a finance drive, which only they have access to, right? And generally, because I've worked in places before, generally the finance team, some of the folders in there would be permissioned off, so only some people in the finance team would have access to it, although most of it is pretty much for the whole finance team. So for that, I know it's not a perfect solution, excuse me, but what you can do is set up what's called Azure Files. So it's essentially a blob storage account, which again is free once you set that up. You set up a series of SMB3 shares. You can do via PowerShell, or you can do it in the new portal. It's fairly straightforward and easy. And because it's all obviously free up front and you're only paying for what you use, you can set up multiple shares. You can set up 50 or whichever how many shares that you need. And then same sort of thing. You have a group policy and you map a drive to those SMB3 based shares. So you could have, even if you wanted to, a storage account for finance and have two shares on there. So when the finance team log on, you use the username and password for the storage account. It maps a drive to the finance share, which is SMB3, and it's Azure Files sitting on that storage account. And it maps the drive to that location, for example.
So basically what we're saying here, to clarify that, is that normally in a file system you have permissions at the top of the tree, and then you have individual permissions throughout files and folders within that structure. Mm-hmm. At the moment with Azure SMB file shares, you can generally only put the permissions at the top level. Now, that's not restrictive. It just means a little bit of design work to have a think about it. So, okay, well, if I can create effectively as many different Azure SMB file shares as I want, yes, then that's the top of my tree. I permission it there. And like I said, you create a finance drive and the finance people access. You create a HR drive and the HR people access it. So again, this is a great option. I'll just give you a quick example. In my case, what I did recently was I did a migration from a SharePoint on-site SharePoint with S Small Business Server, and that meant taking a copy of the databases and uploading them into Azure. The quickest way to do that for the end user was basically for me to create an SMB file share, to give them the details so they could connect to it on their premises and then copy the databases up into that share. Once it was up there, I could then take that and copy that into virtual machine and work with it and attach it to and then do my migration. So SMB file shares, if you haven't had a look at it in Azure, are fantastic. Again, they're not the full functionality of an on-premise file system yet, but they will get there very shortly. And again, we'll put some notes in the rundown as to how you can set all this sort of stuff up. So again, I think they're a great option, but that's the qualification, as well as I understand it, is that the permissions basically at this point in time are only at the top level.
Yeah, well, it's not really permissions. It's more so just on the storage account itself. So pretty much the same thing. Yeah, and two, the magic number in there is three, so SMB3, which for those who don't sort of understand what SMB is, or it's server message block, is what it stands for. And the three just makes sure, it's actually 3.1, I think, it's encrypted. So when you've got a drive map from outside of the Azure data center to Azure, it's actually encrypted. Now, back in the day when they first released Azure Files, it never used to be version SMB3. It was SMB 2.1, and that wasn't encrypted. And that's partly the reason why it wasn't available outside of the Azure data center, because it was like mapping a drive and going over the public internet. Everyone was like, could see what you're doing, basically. So, yeah, so SMB3 is the is the protocol, and it is encrypted. It is safe to use outside of the data center.
Cool. All right, so what's the next option?
Okay, so the other option, it depends on your budget. Now, the other option is fairly good. It's quite a hot topic, because a lot of people have come to me and said, Mark, backups, for example, we need to back up our stuff in Azure using Azure Backup, or and the problem is, trying to price that out and work out how much storage we need, it's going to cost X amount of dollars. And we're obliged, we're legally, we have to abide by sort of legalities or the laws to keep data for a period of so many years, right? So if you work out how many times you're going to back up something, and at this point of time, Azure doesn't have like cold storage like AWS does with the Glacier storage. I mean, it is coming soon. It's called cold storage. But at this point in time, they don't have anything like that. So it will actually cost quite a bit of money if you're storing a lot of data. So this other solution, which I found, actually is a pretty cool solution. It does cost a little bit of money, because you need a virtual machine running 24/7. So essentially what you do, you have a virtual machine, one of the D classes I would recommend, one that supports up to 16 500 IOP drives. So the A series you can use, which is the A7 and above, you can attach 16 500 IOP disks on the same storage account to that virtual machine, essentially getting 16 times 500 IOPs. I guess you don't need 16, but the more the better. You're going to get quite a bit of space on that too. So that's 16 terabytes worth of raw space on that virtual machine. So what you do, you set up storage spaces in Windows Server. You then install the deduplication feature of storage as well. And then you create your logical disk with your 16 Azure disks attached to it, which are a terabyte each in size. And you've got your 16 terabyte logical drive sitting in storage spaces. And because you've turned deduplication on, essentially just open that up, the share, create a share, and then just dump all the stuff on there. And you can use it as a backup. You can use it as a general file repository for finance or marketing. You can use permissions on there. But obviously the benefit is, because it's deduped, you're getting more bang for your buck. So not only 16 terabytes, you're probably getting more than that. And if you're backing up virtual machines, most of the time the virtual machine, the Windows directory doesn't really change that often, so you're probably going to get about 80% saving on that.
Cool. All right, and that's pretty groovy technology when you think about the dedupe and the power of, again, putting in the cloud and the images and all that sort of stuff. So again, I think that one of the things I'm seeing is that there's a lot of hesitancy to get into Azure, especially from a reseller's IT pros point of view. The easy and simple option, I think, is Azure Backup. So you can obviously do Azure Files, folders backup, or you can actually do now server backup as well. So that's a good way to get involved, get started, get some understanding, and get some real benefit. Because again, a lot of the way I implemented is a lot of the family machines are backing up to Azure as well, and they do that regularly and reliably. So I think it's a great option to get started with the product. So okay, so we've gone over those sort of things. What else can we talk about when it comes to Azure storage?
So I guess I'll just quickly add too, it's striping is what you need. So when you're doing the virtual machine, you need to stripe the disks, and it's RAID 0. So I just thought I'd just throw that in because, and obviously T-Storage comes with a 99.95% SLA, so you don't need to worry about any redundancy when you're attaching the disks. So I guess the other thing is probably best practices when it comes to using Azure storage. So if you are, I guess, striping, like as I was mentioning before with a virtual machine, the recommended approach to that is 64 kilobytes allocation unit size, 64 KB is what they recommend. For SQL, if you're using SQL in a virtual machine, the recommended approach is to disable caching on that drive, on that disk. And also, to if you're using a drive for SQL, don't use a geo-redundant storage account. Use a locally redundant storage account. So there's some of the...
Is there a single place for these best practice recommendations, or is it something you've just got to accumulate over time, basically?
There's actually a write-up on this online. I can add it to the show notes. I can send a link through. But, yeah, if you look through it, it's actually quite interesting, and it goes through sort of in detail and different sort of scenarios and what you're trying to do with Azure.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that, again, a lot of the stuff here, it's very broad and there's a lot of stuff, and we'll try and put as many show notes as we can to help people guide them through the information here, because it can be very overwhelming. But as always, if you'd like us to go deeper on any of these topics, or obviously touching a lot of these very quickly just to give you a bit of an overview, please let us know. Please get in contact with us and say, look, you know, it'd be really good if you could do a show focused more closely on SMB file shares or something else, and then we could do that for you. So again, at this point in time, we can just give you a quick overview, but please, by all means, let us know what you'd like us to go deep on there. All right, so we've got some places to stick stuff. Is there any other places we can put stuff in Azure?
So we've talked about, blob storage. So you can set up Azure files and SMB3. We've talked about creating sort of an old school file server in Azure and making use of deduplication. I guess another way you could do, you can use Azure is to use what's called table storage. Now, table storage is another part of your storage account. So remember before, when you set up a storage account, you get queue storage, table storage, blob storage, Azure files, everything under the one storage account, right? So with table storage, it's a little bit different. It's good for as a NoSQL sort of a database of data. And now Troy Hunt could probably explain this a little bit better than I could. I've been using it. I'm not a developer by trade. I have been using table storage for the last 6 months or so. And from my limited knowledge, I use it a lot with PowerShell, because I can store a lot of data into table storage, as in stuff that I'm sort of grabbing off online and then appending it to a table in table storage, and I just keep appending to it every, say, minute. There's data that appends to this same table, and it just grows massively and gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And as Troy Hunt was saying, it's good in that respect, because you can just throw all your data at it, and it is basically all text. And don't forget, with the storage account, it does go up to several terabytes in size, and it's there. And then because it's actually in the cloud and table storage, you can use, well, I use Excel to do a query and pull data from the table storage account into different tables in Excel, and I can do things with it there. Obviously, too, you can use stuff like Power BI and other things to grab data from the table storage account. But it's just a good place to store data. Another use case I'm using for at the moment is I'm developing a tool which requires a password to use. So I use a table storage account. I then create a, I set up a password. I type the password into the table storage account. There's a column saying times used, and there's another column saying times allowed. So based on the password, it says, okay, you're allowed to use this program, say, five times, for example. Once it runs through, at the very bottom of it, it'll sort of append a number to the times used column and put that up. So it's a good way of tracking usage and also to controlling usage of applications based on passwords and things like that.
Great. Okay. So again, I think the main thing here is there are so many options, and that's the thing with Azure. It's basically a tool that allows you to solve a problem a variety of different ways. So even when it comes to something as simple as storage, there are a lot of options. Now that can be a bit confusing, but I think the secret to it obviously is to start very simply, work out what you need. Would you agree, Mark, that apart from backups, maybe the SMB file shares is a great place to start?
Yeah, it is. But also, too, as I said before, whatever your sort of need to do for legal reasons, however long you have to keep data for, as I said before, like it can creep up the costs of using storage for backups and stuff. Storage is cheap in Azure, but if you're using it to back up a lot of stuff and keep it for a period of time, it will actually add up. So if you watch this space, it will come soon. The AWS Glacier version of that in Azure will come soon. It's on the roadmap. So that just means that if you want to put a whole bunch of data into Azure for long-term storage and move it away to a certain area where it's sort of harder to get back, but it's up there in the cloud, it is coming.
Yeah, and I think that's the main thing to, again, appreciate is the fact that this stuff is improving, is changing, more storage is being available, generally cheaper, and it's a matter of understanding, you know, your storage needs. So what you see out there is a lot of people have, you know, accumulated a lot of data because they can. Really, do you need that data? Really, does it need to be accessible in the highest, you know, value storage option, or could it be moved off into something that's cheaper? So generally what you find is my general rule of thumb is you can divide your data into thirds, and generally one third of that data is what I like to call cover my ass data, which means people basically just want to keep that data in case they ever need to refer to it. It's rare that they do. So that sort of information is great for the cheaper version of the Azure storage and potentially the Glacier, the long-term storage when that comes out. But it's certainly mind-blowing to sit there and think of all those disks in all those Microsoft centers and AWS centers spinning around storing information. It's just mind-blowing when you sit down and think about it.
Well, yeah, it is. And don't forget too, I mean, look, okay, it is a public cloud. Don't just assume that you can use it and be safe. I mean, 2 weeks ago, Azure had a slight outage. It was Saturday, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was sitting in front of the computer, and all of a sudden, things starting to sort of. I noticed hiccups and latency issues with storage. We're using Azure Files in the Sydney data center. Now, at that point, I didn't have a second copy of data anywhere. I do now after that event. But I didn't at that point. And obviously, before that point, I never was affected by any type of sort of outage. And that didn't last for too long. However, it did have an effect. So just remember, too, while storage is fairly cheap and storage accounts up front with no data are free, spread them around the world. You have the use of, say, Melbourne and Sydney, or Melbourne and, say, Singapore, which is probably the next closest region. And just like use some sort of a sync program. There's sync programs out there, and just get your data out there to multiple locations. And that way you're ready to go. So if anything does happen, you can either automate a failover or you can jump in and manually initiate a failover to another, say share or location.
Just because you move stuff to the cloud doesn't remove your responsibility to be mindful of your data. So just putting it in the cloud doesn't necessarily take that thing all away from you. It basically gives you more tools, but you certainly need to configure them. You certainly need to be aware of it. And as always, you know, the mantra that you should be using is you need at least three backups of anything that you've got. So again, something you've got locally, something that you've got on some sort of media perhaps, or two different locations, or again, in another data center, which places like Azure make it much easier to do that sort of thing. But you do need to go in and configure that and work out what you need. And you're right. I mean, at the end of the day, if it's that critical, then you need to take the steps to do that. And luckily, Azure has the tools all from one portal. So, again, take responsibility and ownership of your data, no matter where it is, would be my simple advice. So I think we're getting towards the end of our session here. Mark, is there anything that we haven't covered or anything that you want to make sure that you do mention before we do head off and let people get back to their day?
Yeah, just in closing, talking about the, I'll just make it really brief, the different types of data and three copies. Obviously, something I didn't mention was with the storage account, you can have Jira redundant storage, which is three copies in the local data center and three copies in another pair, like in another region pair. So, for example, three copies in Sydney and three copies in Melbourne. You can have locally redundant storage, which is obviously just three copies in the local region. Or you can have read-only Jira redundant storage. And this one's pretty interesting, and I'll just touch on it just briefly. It's obviously Jira redundant storage, so you've got three copies in primary and three copies in a secondary data center, plus read-only means you have read-only access to the second copy of the data. So, for example, if your primary storage account is in Sydney, you have read-only access to the secondary copy of that data in Melbourne, and it's good for, say, DR purposes, which I've used in the past, to say spin up a virtual machine, take a copy of that read-only disk, and so forth. So yeah,
cool. All right, well, I think again what we'll do is we'll make sure that we put all the show notes that we've mentioned. Mark will send me his list of goodies there, and we'll put them up in the show notes so we can refer to them. Again, we certainly encourage people to come back to us with comments, queries, questions. What would you like us to go deeper on? I mean, Mark's got a wealth of knowledge in this, does it day to day. And again, that you can certainly leverage off that by sending us some questions, queries. Now, you can do that traditionally by sending me an email, director@ciaops.com, or hitting me up on the Twitter @directorcia. Best way, again, for Mark, is still the Twitter for you?
Yes. So it will obviously be in the show notes, and we'll stick it on Twitter.
Yep, and again, we can follow this show week by week by week, and what we'll probably look at doing maybe in our next show is we will focus on the storage options in Office 365. So we've done the Azure one here. Our next show we'll look at doing some storage options around what's available in Office 365. But I think with that, we've certainly covered a lot of ground today, Mark. I think there's a lot of great information there. We thank you for providing that and giving some people guidance on what their options are and how they can go about it. I think the main takeaway is simply that there are so many options there that you would need to investigate them. But good places to start are the backup options, so using the Azure backup, the SMB file shares, and then you've got, like I said, the blob and the table storage. So again, I think if you have any specific questions, make sure that you hit up Mark on the Twitter. He'd be more than happy to answer those. So I think in closing, is there anything else you want to add or wind up on, Mark?
Just secretly, just between you and I, Office 365 storage is basically on Azure anyway in the back end.
Of course. I mean, that's the whole idea. It's one. But I think the difference here is, I suppose, Azure gives it a nice graphical user interface, and I think it ties it to a service more, where Azure, I think, you can get to the raw storage.
Yeah.
Whereas the storage generally in Office 365 is attached to SharePoint or is attached to email. So you get the added bonus of actually getting a service you can use with your storage rather than just a place to dump all your data, which, I mean, how many of us have USB drives lying around here which has data on it that we don't want to get rid of but really has no value at all? So look at all those memory keys that we've got lying around. I've got a bazillion of them. They've all got storage. If I plug them all in, I could probably run up my own Azure-style data center with Azure Stack, couldn't I?
Yeah, I reckon you could.
All right, well, I think that's it from me. I thank everybody for listening to this episode. Again, make sure that you do subscribe to us on iTunes and provide reviews, feedback, always good. Share what we're doing with others. And again, as always, let us know what you'd like to hear and how we're getting along. But with that, I think I better get off and start doing some work for the rest of my day. What about yourself, Mark? What have you got planned?
Yep, more Azure.
Well, there you go. Enough. So that's the way to do it. He's the expert, and again, hit him up and ask any questions. So I think with that, I think we'll call a close to another episode of the Need to Know podcast from CIOps. I thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you all in the next episode. Cheers.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.